Hare Krishna. Reading from My Glorious Master. This is Hong Kong, 1974, Part 1. I have divided my telling of Prabhupada's 1974 Hong Kong visit into two chapters. This chapter describes Prabhupada's attempt to rectify and purify my consciousness, struggling and going under. We remained preaching in Hong Kong for Prabhupada's pleasure. Our opportunities to occasionally see him and the letters we received from him gave us the strength to continue. But preaching in Hong Kong was lonely. We had no association with other devotees, since almost no one passed through our Far Eastern preaching outpost. Those who did visit were often peculiar or rebels. Our ISKCON authority visited periodically, but his mood was hardly positive. Rather than leading or assisting our struggle to preach, he seemed to only either reprimand us or demand money. Our Indian supporters began relaying to us reports of unfavorable results of heavy-handed book distribution techniques in Australia and other parts of the world. We began to get critical of the devotees, thinking them passionate or fanatical in their attempts to spread Krishna consciousness. Jagatrini had not even been initiated before she arrived in Hong Kong. She had flown starry-eyed into an arranged marriage, hoping to save the quote unfortunate Chinese of Hong Kong. But her stars quickly had turned to tears. She suddenly had no women devotee friends, and she had a new husband, whose New York, quote, culture and mannerisms appeared harsh to her. She had joined the exciting Los Angeles temple fresh from a budding film career, with months of ecstatic Harinam Sankirtan on Hollywood Boulevard with Vishnujan and 60 other devotees. Then suddenly, she was alone in Hong Kong. I asked devotees in the United States to send a householder couple as reinforcements. One wrote back, "Good devotees don't grow on trees." We had Prabhupada's full support and encouragement, but little else. We preached to the local Indian community, but discovered that company names like Radha Krishna Enterprise, Krishna Kripa Exports, and Lakshmi Narayan Traders did not indicate devotion. We approached wealthy Indian shopkeepers with back to God head in hand, and we were refused its $1 Hong Kong, which was 20 cents, costs. Quote, "But we are doing your work. This is the work of those born in India. We have taken it up, at least read our magazine." Their cold, blank stares cracked our hearts. Prabhupada then recommended we neglect the Indians and preach to the Chinese. Hong Kong was largely populated by Cantonese businessmen who had escaped from communist China in the late 40s. Their ideal was business, their tendency, atheism. In addition, they shared no love with the Hong Kong Indians and looked down on Indian culture. Their conception of Indian religion was right hand for eating, left hand for toilet. Sudama Vipraswami and Tusta Krishna Swami became our friends. Tusta Krishna Swami was successfully preaching in New Zealand, and I had met Sudama Vipraswami when Prabhupada had sent him to Hong Kong in an attempt to establish preaching in China before he opened the temple in the Philippines. Both Tusta Krishna Swami and Sudama Vipraswami had been followers of charismatic Siddhasurupananda Goswami, then Sai, a 1960s spiritual leader from Hawaii. After Sai mixed with Hare Krishna chanting into his brew of natural living meditation and Kundalini yoga, he surrendered his ashram and his disciples to Prabhupada. The Krishna conscious style of these devotees, compared to the somewhat tense dealings with other ISKCON devotees, was refreshing, relaxed, friendly, and practical. At this time, I did not know that tension existed between Siddhasarup and his followers, and Prabhupada's other disciples. I gradually adopted Siddhartha's ideas as an attempt to make our preaching successful in Hong Kong. With Prabhupada's permission, I grew my hair and wore non-devotee clothes. Prabhupada, however, insisted we wear tilak, quote, even if applied thin. We moved our temple room to a smaller room in our flat and converted the temple room into a typical living room with couches and chairs. We began cooking prasad according to Chinese vegetarian tastes and held kirtans with madanga kartals and guitars. Gradually, Chinese people began responding to our Back to Godhead distribution and weekly, quote, yoga meetings in the Hong Kong City Hall. And guests began attending our Sunday feasts and kirtans. At times, we would gather up a group and ferry from crowded Hong Kong to Dai Long Wan, a secluded local beach, take prasad, and chant Hare Krishna as the ocean waves rolled in. Chinese people were becoming devotees. But along with adapting our preaching techniques, we also slackened our Krishna conscious practices, began neglecting to hold Mangalarti, and would just wake up and chant our rounds. I became too busy to study Prabhupada's books. Quote, too busy to study Prabhupada's books. Gradually, the weed of material enjoyment began to attach itself around my tender devotional kripa, and going to the beach to chant and wearing non-devotee clothes were beginning to assume other dimensions than as a preaching tactic. I imagine that Prabhupada understood and was sanctioning all this due to our increased preaching success. Real or imagined, Prabhupada? This one's a little bit long. I think I should wait till next time to read it. So it was such an interesting time. It was a very difficult time. Let me put it like that. And we'll hear more on how Prabhupada dealt with us very soon. Okay. Hare Krishna.